You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Good morning. Welcome to the show. Thanks for listening in once again. It is day three of Royal Ascot. It's Thursday, June the 17th, and I've had to transfer my studio inside today because there is, as predicted, a fair bit of drizzle at Ascot at the moment. There were only 2.4 millimetres of rain overnight, however, so at the moment the ground is still good to firm, and there's certainly not been a deluge as yet this morning, though there could be one or two thundery showers this afternoon. So still looking for fast ground horses as Stradivarius seeks that fourth record-equalling Gold Cup. And all the portents thus far seem good, and we'll be discussing that a little later in this podcast. But first of all, I welcome in David Yates, newsboy from the Daily Mirror, to give his reflections on day two of Royal Ascot, where there were some wonderful high points, Dave, but we rounded off with probably the biggest talking point of all when a well-fancied horse in the final race called Stunning Beauty, trained by Saeed Bin Sarur, ridden by Sylvester de Souza, didn't get out of the stalls because the blindfold was still on, was declared a runner not till 37 minutes after post time, and there was widespread confusion and consternation. What were your thoughts as you left Ascot last night?
Well, I was still shaking my head when I left Ascot. It was a very strange conclusion to proceedings in the Kensington Palace Stakes. I was on the phone to the office. I'd had a couple of winners during the afternoon, Love predictably and maybe less predictably, Kamari. And my office said, right, if you get the winner of the last race, we'll put a bit of blurb on the front saying Newsboys threesome. And if you don't, we can just have a little sting about Love's victory in the Prince of Wales Stakes. So I went out to the steps of the grandstand to watch the race. I watched about the first second and a half of it, in which my selection, Stunning Beauty, stayed rooted in the stalls for a couple of seconds before just coming out, but to no great effect, turned on my heel, and then went back in whilst the race was still underway and wrote that blurb for Love. Very frustrating indeed.
So what do you think should happen? Should there be a rule change? Because just to clarify, at the moment, the horse can only be declared a non-runner and all stakes refunded if A, the stalls are faulty or they've malfunctioned in some way, or B, the jockey is not fully on the horse's back. Neither of those things was the eventuality. The rules also state that as part of a jockey's responsibility, he has to get the blindfold off. Sylvester de Souza says he was shouting at the starter. Starter let them go anyway. But under the rules, that's that. The horse is a runner. Should we change the rules?
Right, well, they're continuing the inquiry this morning, aren't they? I mean, I have huge sympathy for Sylvester de Souza because he's making the starter aware of his plight by shouting, wait, wait. I don't know what more he can do in that instance. As you say, those are the rules that if the jockey's on board and there isn't a fault with the starting mechanism, the horse is deemed a runner. I don't know what happens if the jockey suddenly falls ill in the stalls or something like that. That's a different issue, I suppose. There is one way of dealing with this, and the problem with it is that in all sports, we're trying to move away from discretion, the discretionary powers of officials. The sporting public, it seems these days, want things fairly cut and dried. That's why I suppose we have VAR in football, so that you can draw a line across the pitch and say, right, however ridiculous it might seem, his armpit is offside and so the goal doesn't stand. And in this sense, the obvious way of dealing with it is to introduce a discretionary power on the part of the officials to say, well, it's the jockey's responsibility to remove the hood, but he was, it seems, according to the evidence, asking the starter to wait. The starter might not have heard or might just have let the horses go anyway. In this instance, we have decided that although there is fault, it falls into something of a sort of grey area, black hole. And so we've decided that punters should have their money back and that that Stunning Beauty, in this case, would be deemed a non-runner. Then, of course, it's it's not a victimless crime, this, in the sense that you would then have a withdrawal to make to other bets. But I suppose that's the obvious way of doing it. And this happens in other countries, that it's come under discussion in Britain, but it doesn't seem as though it's a particularly popular move. I suppose that one of the reasons for this is that it happens extremely rarely, although it has happened at Ascot before, and obviously it happened yesterday, a well-backed and well-fancied 7-1 shot in one of the marquee meetings of the year.
You remember the Harry Angel incident where he got very upset in the stalls prior to a big sprint race here at Ascot, and Adam Kirby had his foot on the plate of the stalls structure. Now, thereafter, in 2018, Brant Dunshay, the chief regulatory officer for the BHA, gave us a conference speech to the International Federation of Horse Racing Authorities. You can look at this. It's public record. It's online, where he argued for a rule change that would have enabled punters to get their money back yesterday. And to go with the more internationally recognised idea that if a horse's chance has been materially affected by something that's happened at the start, then he can be declared a non-runner, as happens in Hong Kong. But, yeah, there was no appetite from the other stakeholders in the sport, the racecourses or the bookmakers, to change it because of, you know, complications with refunds, etc. Very easy to hold the BHA up as the whipping boy in this instance, but historical context suggests that they need backup from all sections of the industry to get this rule changed.
Well, that's very true, but also, Nick, there are two sides to this coin, aren't there? In that if a 7-1 shot is deemed a non-runner when she's in the stalls, there's going to be a rule 4 that's going to impact on winning punters. And so even if one were to canvass the views of punters, of course, you've got the backers of Stunning Beauty, who this morning would say, including my dear mother, who would probably say, well, yes, I think in this instance there should be a discretionary rule whereby Stunning Beauty was deemed a non-runner and I get my money back. But of course, the next day there might be on the other end of that bargain and think, well, I'm not sure.
And just rounding up the best of day two, Dave, should we be anointing Love as the next great star of the sport or not?
I think that would be a bit premature. The interesting thing I thought yesterday was that we saw a different side to Love's game, in that she fought very hard to victory. If we wind the clock back to those three Group Ones of last year, Nick, the 1,000 Guineas was won by 4.25 lengths, the Oaks by 9, and then the Yorkshire Oaks by 5. So by my maths, that's 18.25 lengths of an aggregate in three Group Ones. Yesterday, it was 3/4 of a length. And I think running to the furlong pole, or certainly at the 2-furlong pole, dear old Sangarius looked as though he was travelling really well before he dropped away. But Orderia certainly did throw down a very stubborn challenge, and in the end was denied by 3/4. It was the same distance back to Armory, of course, who had won at Chester for Aidan O'Brien last month. So we saw a different side to her game. Obviously, we know, because Aidan always tells us that that Galileo imparts that will to win in his progeny, and that is, as I think we all agree, the most important characteristic of a thoroughbred. It's no use having all the talent if you don't have that will to win. But yeah, I thought, well, she was workmanlike. You couldn't say she was impressive. She had to dig in, she had to work hard for victory. But it was her first start since last August. Remember, of course, that she didn't run at Paris-Longchamp in the Arc. She was withdrawn as a result of the Glupot conditions in Paris. That was before, of course, Aidan O'Brien didn't have his runners at the meeting anyway. So it was her first start for a long time, and it's now her fourth Group One on the spin and a fifth overall. So for all that she had to roll her sleeves up, I don't think that we need to be too damning of what was a brave victory. Mm.
So, of course, the big race today, the big race of the whole week, is the Gold Cup at Ascot. It's a race that's been won 3 times by Stradivarius, yes, But don't forget it's been won multiple times by trainer Mark Johnston as well. A doubly with Royal Rebel and also with the great Double Trigger. And he, perhaps, is the man with the best chance of lowering Stradivarius's colours today with the very exciting Dubai Gold Cup winner, Subjectivist, who's been kept away since. Subjectivist runs in the neon green and blue colours of Dr. Jim Walker, who joins me now. Jim, just tell me how you're feeling on Gold Cup morning, a huge day for you and your horse.
Yeah, well, nervous would be one way of describing it, but I suppose a bit tired, actually, because I haven't been able to sleep for the last 5 days. Full of expectation and hope, that's for sure.
Is that the extent to which this sport really consumes you as a passion?
Oh, my goodness, yes. I'm on holiday this week from my job. I took the whole week off. I've been to Doncaster already, Beverley, going to Newmarket on Friday. Just stopping off at Ascot today for the Gold Cup.
For those who don't know, you're a globally renowned economist. And I'd imagine forgive me if I'm wrong, because I don't know, but I'm imagining the contrast between the way your mind has to operate in your professional life and the way that your brain gets completely scrambled by racing. It's quite a stark one.
In some ways, but, there's a lot of similarities between horse racing and economics. The judgment of odds and the judgment of where you put horses, where you put your bets, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of investment and economies, because of course the kind of economics I do is always investment related, and we're giving advice to fund managers. So, it's kind of like placing a bet as well. I feel as if horse racing and economics complement each other pretty damn well. Even to the extent, of course, that you can forecast neither.
And aside from the land of your birth, what has given you a simpatico with Mark Johnston? Why do you like having horses in training with him?
Well, I think basically because I've had success, Nick, if truth be told. We bought a horse, a friend of mine and some others, in a breeze-up sale a few years ago. Which did nothing, but we called it Chicago School, much to my chagrin, since I'm not particularly keen on the Chicago School of Economics. And the next year I bought one with Mark called Monticello, which won first time out and then won second time out, then was placed in a listed race. And the following year I managed to buy one that I called Austrian School, which was much more in keeping with my view of the world, and it was very successful, unlike Chicago School, which about sums up the economics as well.
So
from there on, it's just been having horses with Mark, and William Jarvis.
So why Subjectivist then?
Well, again, it's in line with the Austrian School of Economics, where the whole idea of how to value goods and services is that it's the subjective valuation that you place on them that actually determines the price, and then the price determines all sorts of other things from demand to supply.
So with all that in mind, how does that side of your mind, the one that can sleep and the one that can think straight, rationalise Subjectivist's chance this afternoon relative to our expectations and the expectations of the market?
Well, you've just got to look at the form and make a judgment on that basis, and of course on the basis that he's a relatively young horse who I think has been improving, and certainly improving over his last couple of runs. He broke the track record at Dubai when he won the Dubai Gold Cup there, and that was a track record held by Vazirabad. And of course, if you listen to John Gosden, the only horse that he feels that Stradivarius was given a really hard race by was Vazirabad. So taking a line through that, you've got to say that Subjectivist looks like a horse with a chance.
Well, Dr. Jim Walker there and Dave Yates, that was a very compelling case for subjectivist. And lots of people have been thinking about the ground and the potential rain as a key danger to Stradivarius as well. I mean, there's been drizzle, not enough of it, though, to think that all the balls are simply going to go up in the air as regards this afternoon's Gold Cup.
It's certainly not the thunderstorms that John Gosden was fearing that the French were going to give us yesterday afternoon. It just shows how what a strange thing it is that you get. I think in some cases the forecast was up to 20 millimeters of rain, and really what's fallen thus far is probably what the clerk of the course would put on to maintain the conditions, isn't it? Something like that. Yeah. So, yeah, I tipped Trushan in the Gold Cup, and I was hoping for a bit more than that. Not particularly soft, but I was hoping that it would get to good or maybe the easy side, because I thought that would work in his favour. Obviously, he was a wide margin winner of the Long Distance Cup last year, and he tried to give Japan weight in the Auburn at Chester, and that was a really good run. But yeah, I wouldn't have minded a bit more, truth be told.
Well, here at Ascot yesterday, there was some positive vibe towards the Lexus Melbourne Cup and a little bit of negative vibe as well. Positive very much in the shape of the Queen's Vase winner, Kimari, has very similar profile to Cross Counter, who won the Cup for Charlie Appleby a few years ago as a three-year-old progressive gelding. And then Aidan O'Brien, in an interview with Laura King on Dubai television, suggested that he'd be very unlikely to head down under with a group of horses this year because of the regulatory changes that we talked about on this podcast a few months ago with regard to getting horses to the Melbourne Cup and the veterinary checks that they need to get there. Steve Rossich is the chief executive of the Victoria Racing Club and joins me now. Steve, a little bit of good news, a little bit of less good news, I guess, for you out of Ascot yesterday.
Well, firstly, Nick, thank you for the opportunity to say hello and chat to you from Melbourne, Australia, on your podcast, which is no doubt a very busy week over at your part of the world. And it does generate news. And pleasingly, people are talking about the Lexus Melbourne Cup and how it fits into the international program. And we're looking forward to a number of good contenders coming out from Europe to compete in this year's instalment.
When you tightened those veterinary regulations and wanted horses to be scanned and tested and going through rigorous checks, what impact did you think that would have on the mindset of trainers here?
Well, it was a bit unknown. Our focus was ensuring that we were absolutely setting a new global benchmark for ensuring the safety of horses and jockeys, and we respected that. That would take some time to digest, and that there would be differing opinions, two of which you mentioned at the top of this interview. But we're working through that now, and Racing Victoria, who no doubt you know is the regulatory body here, equivalent to the BHA, is in charge with implementing these new recommendations. But as the racing club, the Victoria Racing Club, that's responsible for the custodianship of the Lexus Melbourne Cup, we're also liaising directly with owners and trainers around the world, and predominantly in Europe, to talk to them about the changes and to get some feedback and, talk firsthand and hear what they've got to say. And you know, we realise this is a new benchmark. We think it will improve the safety, which is the focus. And the feedback that we receive in time and over the course of after the running of this year's race is used to adapt the changes in time.
And in reality, how many international competitors do you really want? I mean, I think there was a feeling when this raft of measures came out, there was a feeling here of, well, do they really want us to come and participate in the Melbourne Cup, the Caulfield Cup, the Cox Plate? Or is this a way of trying to push Europeans out of racing in Australia?
The answer to that one's easy. It's absolutely not designed for that at all. The involvement of our international trainers and their horses is incredibly important to the success of the Lexus Melbourne Cup. In fact, the Melbourne Cup Carnival and the broader spring racing carnival here in Victoria, if you look at the numbers, you know, since 2006, I think 16, sorry, there was I think 9 international runners, 11 across 17 to 19, and 8 runners in 2020, which in the circumstances, given COVID-19 and the travel restrictions is still an outstanding number. What will happen from here with these restrictions? It's unknown. There might be a few less runners in the 2021 version of the race. But pleasingly, we're also hearing positive feedback. Overwhelmingly, the people we're talking to understand that changes to the rules and regulations needed to be made. And pleasingly, trainers are indicating that they're interested in coming down. There's a great prize on offer in terms of prize money and great kudos in winning this event. And people will find a way, and they'll find a way this year.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about the news that's dropped this morning, Steve, of a positive test returned by one of the most talked about Australian imports of recent seasons, Zaki, now trained by Annabelle Neesham, who pre-race tested positive for an anti-inflammatory before a second place finish three starts ago. How worried do you think we should be globally as a sport that the issue of medication seems to be rearing its head just about every way you look?
Well, I guess it's an interesting perspective. I'm new to working in the racing industry, the thoroughbred racing industry, having moved across with 21 years in professional sport in the Australian Football League. And what I can say and what I've seen in our industry here in Australia and what I'm learning about us internationally is that it's an incredibly well-managed professional sport. With all the stakeholders caring for our horses as the equine athletes that are performing at the highest level and our jockeys and our industry participants at the highest level. I think the rules and regulations from the various governing bodies are first class. So there will always be challenges and that's the nature of global sport. But I think as an industry, we're well placed and we can always get better. And that's the evidence. And that's what we're trying to achieve with these rules and regulations we're putting in place for international horses travelling to the Spring Carnival here in Australia, trying to set a new global benchmark. And I'm sure all the people that are in these administrative roles and responsible for custodians of the sport across the world are in the same place. How can we continue to improve? But the sport has set a very good benchmark to start with.
Yeah, I was looking at Annabelle's statement, and she was, you know, very frank and, you know, very apologetic, and was saying, you know, it's a routine anti-inflammatory you might give to horses after work. And it got me thinking, well, do we need to shift the cultural framework? Do we need to shift the framework away from routinely giving horses anti-inflammatories after work? And in essence, is that what your raft of changes to the Melbourne Cup is edging towards?
Look, that's really a question for Racing Victoria as a regulatory body. You know, I think these rules and regulations that we're putting in place, these 41 recommendations, are about the checks and balances to ensure that the horses that are competing at the highest level after travelling on long-haul flights and competing in a foreign environment can do it as safely as possible. You know, the scanning is probably the biggest feature of it, and I think the checks and balances we've got in place with respect to medications is really strong already as a benchmark.
Steve, I'm very grateful for you talking to me today. Just tell me a little bit about how Royal Ascot this week is resonating in Australia.
Well, it's one of the world's great carnivals, and it is resonating. Unfortunately, I couldn't stay up late enough last night, but I took in some of day one. I'm hoping to stay up a little bit later tonight, as many viewers and interested parties are here in this part of the world. I'm hoping Twilight Payment, whom was a very worthy winner of last year's Lexus Melbourne Cup, surprises nicely in the Ascot Gold Cup tonight. So looking forward to tuning in.
Steve Rossich there, the chief executive of the Victoria Racing Club, looking forward to the Lexus Melbourne Cup, which may this year feature Charlie Appleby's Kimari. Well, if you were with us on the podcast last week in the build-up to Royal Ascot, you will have heard me talking about the brand new commercial partnership between this historic racecourse and Howden Insurance. David Howden, the founder, is with me now. I mean, David, we're into day three of Royal Ascot. I mean, how are you and your clients enjoying the experience so far?
Well, I think it's been amazing, Nick. I mean, obviously, after what's been, to put it mildly, an incredibly challenging 18 months for so many of us, to actually be able to come to Royal Ascot, enjoy, as always, the most fantastic racing in that wonderful setting. And for the last few days of most glorious weather, but importantly, being able to mingle and be free with people and just actually, you know, socialise again has been amazing. And of course, we've seen some great racing as well. So I have to say, it's been in a way, it's an interesting year for us to start our partnership with Ascot, but it's been a wonderful start. And all our, you know, clients and colleagues have come, I think absolutely revelled in the opportunity to be out and about again, Nick. It's just been amazing.
I mean, how important is that for you from a business point of view? I've spoken to so many people who have been chained to their desks for a year and a half, who work in the financial sector or the insurance sector. How important is it for you to actually be with people face-to-face to generate business?
Well, I think it is. I mean, we are social creatures, humans, and ultimately our business, you know, is about servicing our clients and their needs. And that's very hard to understand what the needs of clients are and what they want if you can't sit down and talk to them. I always say that the critical thing for an insurance broker to do is to listen, you know. And I think that, you know, ultimately, again, if you're trying to build a business, as we are, you know, you need to build culture. And to build culture, people need to be together. So I'm not saying there won't be some opportunities from the sort of the remote working that came from it. My view is we need to get that back out there. We're in, you know, nearly 50 countries around the world. And we normally are, you know, out there seeing our clients, visiting them. And it's a challenge when you can't travel and you can't see people and you can't listen to what they've got to say. So I'm looking forward to the world hopefully starting to turn again, Nick.
You've already made a very significant impact in the equestrian world as the founder and the sort of curator of the Cornbury Horse Trials. How are you finding racing by comparison?
That's a very good question, actually. I mean, I'm passionate about the things in sport that really to me matter, which is really the athletes. And of course, the amazing thing about both racing and eventing is you've got two sets of athletes. You've got the riders and you've got the horses, and I just think the celebration of that is wonderful. And I think that, you know, if you look at it from the point of view of eventing and horse racing, they're also great British sports. They're things that we really excelled at. And in some ways, it's again back to the challenges of COVID, I think in some ways racing is probably, although it's been obviously challenging to be doing it behind closed doors, I think has run better in many ways than eventing has. We obviously ran for the first year time last year and made sure we did, and I think it was a great success, and we're running again this year. But as you know, Nick, quite a few of the great British eventings have actually pulled the plug for this year. I think it's a shame for the horses and a shame for the riders, all the people who put time and effort into it. So I think I would say probably racing's done a better job of coping with COVID.
And I can't let you go, David, without asking you about your own ownership interests this week. It would be quite something if you were to cap your first week as a commercial partner at Ascot with a winner. What chances?
Well, let's see. Well, we got Nakatomiya, Wesley Ward one that I've invested in, along with Qatar Racing, obviously, in the Group 2 Norfolk today. You know, Wesley's very effective normally, as you know. A couple of his come close but haven't quite got there, so fingers crossed for that one. But there are big hopes also for a wonderful Moselita, who runs in my colours on the Palace for Hollywood House handicap tomorrow. She likes a bit of giving the ground. She's been pretty electric, so I'm hopeful she might you might bring me an Ascot win. You never know. I've had a few runners and no winners, so it would be rather lovely, Nick, in our partnership year to achieve that, I have to say. But let's see. You know the ups and downs of racing.
David Howden, whose company is now one of the commercial partners here at Ascot Racecourse. Well, we know that Ascot traditionally is as much about fashion as it is about the horses. We've all had our wings clipped a little this year because of the reduced crowd, but people have still looked fantastic, which I'm sure is to the delight of Milliner to the Stars, Lisa Tan, who joins me now. And Lisa, before anyone thinks that I've just crowbarred a random fashion bot into this podcast, you are truly one of my most regular and loyal listeners.
I absolutely am. If you looked at my Spotify account and saw my most listened to 2020, I can confidently say Nick Luck beat out Taylor Swift.
No way.
Absolutely.
Well, there's a first time for everything, and it's certainly the first time that I've been mentioned in the same breath as Taylor Swift. Tell me this week, How have you enjoyed it? How have you been able to kind of size up the sort of fashion element of Royal Ascot?
It's been really interesting. I came on Tuesday, so obviously the first day no one really knew what to expect. I was speaking to a few people, some photographers and the guys from World Horse Racing, and I think they all said what I had seen myself. The fashion is actually at a really high standard. I think everyone's been preparing for this, even though they've only had sort of 2 weeks to actually get their tickets in order. But everyone's been constantly thinking about it, and everyone wants an excuse to dress up. So everyone's been looking fantastic. The gentlemen, the ladies, it's just been beautiful.
So are trends on pause then, or can you still see things that are on point, on trend?
I actually have been seeing trends. That was the one strange thing that I noticed on Tuesday. There were fewer people, but more of some things that were so evident, such as pillboxes. Everyone's been wearing hats that sort of sit Jackie O style on the back of the head, and maybe that's just because of comfort and convenience, because obviously, you know, we are allowed to hug people these days, and something without a brim is much easier to actually hug in. And the other thing I was saying to Sarah Kate Byrne, Francesca Cumani's stylist, a lot of mustard. People are loving the colour mustard, which is such a bizarre thing. But Sarah was wearing a lovely mustard dress the other day as well. I know Gina Bryce has a couple in her arsenal too. And yeah, they're the two trends that I've seen standing out this week.
Yeah, I was teasing Gina the other day for she loves that Iberian vibe, doesn't she?
Oh, she loves it. The Spanish flamenco girl is definitely her.
All right, who else have you been impressed with this week?
Obviously, Francesca's been looking fantastic. I know that Alex Hammond, Sarah's been styling her this week, and she's been looking really particularly fantastic too. Just in general, anyone that I've seen, I think the level is so much higher than what would normally be. I think we're seeing people that are dressed really, really well, and people that are dressed still quite well, but you're not seeing the general sort of over-the-top tragic crowd that we would normally get. Like, people are really on point this year.
No tragics at Ascot this year.
No tragics, no.
Right, tell me who's going to win this afternoon, because you are an inveterate punter.
I am, but I feel like I'm going to jinx any horse that I actually give as a tip today, which is almost why I don't want to mention the S word in the Gold Cup.
What, subjectivist?
Oh, yeah.
Spanish mission?
That's fine. The other S word that might be trained by a pair of Gosdens. I would personally love to see him win the fourth, because I was actually at Ascot the year that Yates won his fourth. So I feel like there's some nice symmetry there if that actually happened. So my fingers are firmly crossed, and my money will not be on him just in case I do have a jinx.
Lisa, thanks so much. Have a great day.
Thank you, Nick. You too.
All right, then, time for our daily Royal Ascot World Pool update with Jamie Hart, who's with me now. Jamie, yesterday, how did you get on?
It was an interesting one yesterday, Nick. We were actually down a little bit on last year, but that most of that comes down to the Prince of Wales. When it dropped down to six runners, it means the Hong Kong pool won't run the Quinella Place, the swinger. It needs seven runners or more. And that race, that pool is their biggest pool, so they'll regularly take £1 million into that pool. And so when a race drops down below seven runners, it really does impact the turnover. And at 4:20 our time, that's kind of 20 past midnight their time, that's the absolute sweet spot. Normally that's our biggest race, but instead of taking over £3 million, we only took a couple of million on that one, only a couple of million. But it meant that we took just over £20 million on the day, which was against last year's about 22. So that was the only one. But there was some good results through there. The Tricast was beaten by the Trifecta in every race, and across, on average by about double. So there's still plenty of value in there, but mostly around those bigger races.
In terms of which result was best if you were playing the World Pool, which one stood out?
There were quite a few in there, really, but mostly around those Trifectas. Where they were bigger, five out of seven were bigger on the exacta. I think five out of seven were bigger on the win, but all by roughly the same. There wasn't one absolute standout. I think sometimes when we've got the really big 66-1 chances, we think, you know, they've been quite close, because sometimes you'll get 128-1 or something like that, but we've actually been beating them pretty much the same, about 20% across the board from the small ones to the bigger ones. But I'd say just hunt around at the time, but there's no real... We've been looking for it for the secret source of exactly where they overpay. But outside those very short ones that they really get behind, looking today, I think it was just the most interesting ones, obviously, the Gold Cup with Stradivarius in, and just how much they get behind that. But if you're against Stradivarius, I'm sure there'll be some plenty of value in there if you leave it out of your exactas and quinellas.
And I'm reliably informed by sources very close to this podcast, Jamie, that you were enjoying the hospitality of the excellent Fitzdares Club yesterday.
Yes, it was a lovely afternoon, actually. So we did racing on Tuesday and then Fitzdares Club yesterday. And you don't even have to move. They look after you very well in there. But I did make my donation to Fitzdares over the afternoon. I'm hoping to get back on mark. I think there's been a lot of high draws in the straight races, so I might be concentrating my exactas and trifectas around that today.
I'm loving the fact that this podcast can, facilitate hands across the water, hands across the fixed odds pari mutuel water, and lead us to a better world.
I do hope so, but it's very interesting. I'd recommend it for anybody that's in London and gets a bit of time to watch some racing.
Jamie Hart there, thanks to him and to all my guests. Always good to keep the sponsors happy, that should do. And Fitzdares have an offer for you today as well. You get your money back as a free bet if your horse is beaten by a neck or less on day three at Royal Ascot, and that applies to all seven races. Money back as a free bet if your horse is beaten by a neck or less on day three. That is with Fitzdares, and terms and conditions apply. Right, David Yates, just the 3, 6, 7 winners today, and then you'll be all over the front back pages of the Mirror tomorrow with a trifecta or a ménage à trois or Newsboys threesome or whatever it is.
Right, well, thank you very much. I'm going to go with Surefire, number 16 in the 535, the King George the Fifth Stakes handicap. This horse made a really impressive handicap debut at Leicester earlier this month. That was over a mile and two, an extra 2 furlongs here. Is well handicapped office with a £6 penalty. Of course, this is much tougher, but I think lots of people watching that Leicester win thought, that horse can go places and can go pretty high. I don't know quite where the ceiling is for Surefire, but I think it's fairly lofty. So I'm going to stick him in the 535, number 16, Surefire in the King George V handicap.
And you'll be reassured to know that as I speak to you, I'm polishing my beautiful silk topper with the official Silk Toppers small velvet cushion that polishes these hats.
Oh, the polishing mouse. Yes.
I couldn't be happier with it. And I'm just sorry that it's only available to viewers in the US this week.
Yes. Well, I hope that it will be shown to a global audience in time. That's a beauty, that one. It's as nice a hat as has ever left my hands as the CEO and founding chairman of Silk Toppers.
Okay, the top hat man of old London town, David Yates, thank you very much, a.k.a. newsboy of the Daily Mirror. I hope you've enjoyed today's offering. We will be back tomorrow, Friday, but that, for the moment, was Thursday, June the 17th.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.